in your opinion, what are some of the biggest education stories of this past year?
Well, we've got the charter school bill was enacted, and we've got a lot of changes to the AAA, the Alabama Accountability Act, have more transparency in where the dollars are going. And we had a school finance study that was the results were released and really hasn't gotten a lot of play, had some real negative things to say about how we fund our schools here in Alabama. And then recently, you know, we've just seen a new bill that's on its way in that might change the way teachers get evaluated and paid.
Talk a little bit about the charter school bill. Why was that so important?
Well, Alabama was one of the last states to get charter schools, okay? What we're hearing is charter schools won't actually be a reality until 2017. There's a lot of planning. There's been a lot of rulemaking. So how it affects our education landscape, we really don't know. We're not going to know for 3 or 4 years. The first year, no more than 10 charter schools can begin. So it's kind of on a pilot basis, really.
I think it's safe to say some people are not happy with the amount of time this is taking. Is the state bureaucracy possibly dragging its feet on this?
You know, I don't know. Bureaucracy is intriguing to me. Some people, you know, when you have full control over your own destiny, you get to make the rules. But when you're making the rules for 740,000 children and 1,500 schools and 136 school districts and 90,000 employees, I can see where it would take some time and you would want to get it right. We have the benefit of being one of the last to adopt charter schools, so we can look and see what other states where they've made their mistakes. Recently, we were cited as having the fourth strongest charter authorization law by the National Association for Charter School Authorizers. That was kind of a big deal. So, you know, maybe we got that part right. Implementation is always where you see whether or not it worked. I don't know if anybody's dragging their feet. I think it's just a really complicated thing.
Given some of the implementation issues that have popped up in other states, I mean, does it make you worried at all?
Charter schools are only as good as the operators, right? So you want to make sure you get the right operator for a charter school. I don't know how you know up front if a charter school operator is going to be a good one or not. So it's always an experiment. It's just when you hire anybody to do work for you, you never know until the work is done. There are red flags. There are certainly best practices, but I wouldn't say I'm worried. I think I'll be watching very carefully, as will everyone. The first few charter schools will really set the tone for whether or not this is going to work in Alabama.
Speaking of watching carefully, the Alabama Accountability Act has been controversial since it was passed. There's been some movement on that front.
Well, some changes were enacted this year. I think June is when they officially went in. We have more reporting requirements now. So the SGOs, the scholarship granting organizations, the ones who hand out the scholarships to students, have to be more transparent. They have to tell us more about who they're giving money to, not particular students, but which schools are getting money. And that list first came out, sometime in October. And, of course, I put together a spreadsheet, you know, to see who's getting the money. And it told some interesting stories. It told some stories, you know, Catholic schools seem to be a big winner here. 900 or so of the 3,500 scholarships went to students who were attending Catholic schools, with only about 100 of those having been enrolled in public school the year before. So this is scholarship money that went to students who were already enrolled in a Catholic school, perhaps. And, you know, now it doesn't come exactly from the coffers, right? They call them neo-vouchers, right? It sort of skirts the education trust fund, but it's money that might have gone into the education trust fund, but instead jumps over the education trust fund and goes directly to the private schools. So, you know, the more we learn about where the money's going and who it's being awarded to, we'll get a better picture of, is it doing what the legislators told us it would do?
Now, I know you're Catholic, but you're also an education reporter who cares deeply about public education in Alabama. Does the fact that this public money is sort of being diverted to private schools, to Catholic schools, is that a red flag for you?
I don't know that it's a red flag. You know, Catholic schools have a very good reputation for educating children who may come from impoverished backgrounds, or, you know, morally they have a great reputation for teaching morals and theological background. So, for me, I don't know that I would worry. Again, it's I'm watching carefully. I want to know what happens to the communities that are where the children are being pulled from. Is this having a negative impact on the public schools? Because private schools are not for everyone, right? They're still not for everyone. Even if you have a scholarship available, not everyone, private schools can turn students away. They can, they're not subject to the same accountability standards in terms of grades and test scores. There's very little, we know very little about how kids do academically in private schools. Where the public schools, we have, fleshed them, we ripped them wide open and we ask a lot of questions about what's happening in school climate and punishment. And we don't have that same information for private schools.
Just for our listeners, refresh our memories here. So the Alabama Accountability Act, basically, very boiled down, that takes tax money that would otherwise go to the Education Trust Fund and makes it available for scholarship-granting organizations and for a tax credit for families sending their children to non-failing public or private schools.
That's correct. The Alabama Accountability Act was passed as a way to basically get children out of failing public schools. All right. So it defined a set of failing public schools based on test scores. And then children who were zoned to those failing schools could either, their parents could move them into a non-failing public school or a private school and get a tax credit for whatever that cost was, or children could be were eligible for scholarships that were compiled by scholarship granting organizations, which we call SGOs. That's the term for it. SGOs take donations from individuals or corporations, and those donations are a dollar for dollar tax credit. So that's money that never makes it into the Education Trust Fund as an income tax. It provides tax credits for kids who might otherwise go to failing public schools, and it provides scholarships for tax credit scholarships for students to use that money to go off to a private school.
So with all things education and government related, money and politics do come into play here. You mentioned a funding study. Tell us about that.
Well, a group, Augen Blick Pelike and Associates, we call them APA because the names are a little long. APA did a study. They were hired by the State Department to do a study of Alabama's school funding system. How do we fund schools? And we got the results of that at a state board meeting in, I believe it was September or August. And what they told us was that the way that Alabama schools are funded is massively inequitable, that it creates all sorts of haves and have-nots, okay? So the school districts that have a lot, and the school districts that have very little local money are the have-nots, all right? So, and then there's, on the adequacy level, they told us that our funding is inadequate. There are a couple of models that they use. I won't go into the details, but we were about 20% short in what was really needed to fund at an adequate level to get children where we want them to be. You know, part of this is, what do you want for your children? Alabama has a history of saying, well, we're happy with the haves and the have-nots. I mean, you know, the system has developed not out of ignorance. You know, there's been some purposeful choices that have been made that have allowed some school districts to amass more local money than others. So, you know, if you look at it on a pyramid basis, there are about four districts with about 20,000 kids that have the benefit of everything. Well, what about the other 730,000, right? And that's what this school funding study was trying to get at. And what they made a couple of recommendations, and it was to fund schools not based on, you know, the number of warm bodies at the school, which is how we fund them now, but to look at the needs of the children. If children have special needs, how severe are those special needs? And to use sort of a funding factor, like 1.4 times the, if it costs 1.4 times the amount of a non-special needs child to adequately educate them, then provide 1.4 times that amount of money.
So is that a reflection? Could that be seen as the state bureaucracy just saying, hey, we need more money? Is that a reflection on the politics of the state? What do you think about all that?
I don't know. You know, I'm really am not good with politics. I'm kind of a you know, the gray area confuses me. I like things written down. I like to see words on a page and hear words spoken. But I think what it says is that the state, you know, we've had this recession and districts are struggling with how to budget appropriately, how to allocate resources to improve student achievement, because that's the whole goal of it, right? So if you look at the numbers and you adjust them for inflation, our schools are really working with less than they ever have in about 10 or 12 years, okay? So now you've got schools that are working with less than they ever have. I do believe that a lot of states are looking at their state funding formulas now. I mean, the foundation program was set in 1995. 20 years, probably time for, you know, to take a look at how are we doing this. We had some research back then that said a foundation program was great. Now what the research is showing is that you really need to take a look at student needs. Some schools have higher needs than other students with higher needs, higher at-risk populations. So what I heard was the need just to simply say, are we allocating and distributing state taxpayer dollars in a way that's going to impact, have the greatest impact on for all kids?
You're saying maybe a good idea might be a more customized approach, looking at the actual students as opposed to just sort of a blanket treating them all the same based on some general numbers.
Exactly. And that was not my idea. That was what the study said, is a more equitable way of dividing up resources.
So just yesterday, Alabama School Connection put up a web piece about this draft bill that's being circulated around the internet, proposed by Senate Pro Tem Del Marsh, that could pretty drastically revamp how education is done in Alabama. Can you tell us a little bit about that draft bill?
Well, remembering, you know, it is a draft, and we're told that it could change. It's in its second iteration right now. The session starts in a few weeks. Senator Marsh has said he would file the bill after the session starts, so we'll all wait for the final bill. But what this bill does, it takes Alabama and thrusts us into the 21st century in terms of what other states are doing. Under No Child Left Behind, there was a mandate to tie teacher evaluations to test scores. Alabama evaded that. I'm still not quite sure how, but we never enacted that at the State Department. So now, of course, No Child Left Behind is gone. Its replacement no longer requires that. But at this point, Alabama is one of only six states that does not tie teacher evaluation to test scores in some way. The devil is in the details. How much of a percentage? Is it based on growth? And what if you're a new teacher? What if you're a special education teacher? You know, how does the details have yet to be worked out?
Right. I mean, my thought was, if you're an art teacher or a music teacher, how is that going to tie into your evaluation?
And I don't have the answer for that. We have to wait and see. But another part of this is that if teachers do exceedingly well, right, then they will be paid a bonus. Some teachers, there will be an opportunity if the bill, you know, as the bill is written right now, as the draft bill stands, there's an opportunity for teachers who are on a tenure track to say, okay, I'm going to jump off the tenure track. I'm going to give up my tenure, and I want to actually be paid under a performance salary schedule, which is going to be a new salary schedule that's developed that provides for incentives for excellent teachers. Now, bringing this to scale, I have some concerns. Where do you find 45,000 excellent teachers? You know, no comment on what's happening out there now. We have a lot of struggles in our schools, right? Can we really expect every teacher that's employed to be able to mount all of those struggles that children face in a day and then show some fantastic result on a standardized test score? It's going to be an interesting challenge.
Do you think it's ever fair to judge a teacher by student test scores?
Wow. I'm still forming my opinion on that. At this point, you know, just having published the draft bill and really taking a look at what Alabama's legislators have in mind for our teachers, my next goal is to go dig out the research. What does the research show? How much of a influence does a teacher have on a standardized test score? We know that teachers influence the classroom every single day, but how much of that actually translates to that end-of-the-year standardized test score? I don't know the answer to that, so I'm going to start digging out my academic research.
Are you worried about teaching to the test?
That's always a concern, right? We have a new test right now. We're using the ACT Aspire, and teachers are not really familiar with it yet. It's only been given twice, so they don't know necessarily how to teach to the test just yet. But as people get familiar with the kinds of items that are on the ACT Aspire, certainly you have that worry that you could put so much emphasis on that. I mean, if you're getting measured on a standardized test score, human behavior is we will focus on that thing that gets us a really great evaluation. So what will we give up in the process? I don't know. I want to look to places like Tennessee who've been doing it and see how have their classrooms changed. Is it better or is it narrowed the curriculum even more? I just really don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
What is the biggest education story of 2015?
Well, you know, here it is, the end of 2015, and I think we were just handed what could be the biggest story of 2016. 2015, really, I'd have to go with the charter school bill, you know, introducing charter schools to Alabama, even though we're a couple years away. Just the idea that we are now going to allow public charter schools is a pretty phenomenal one for Alabama.
Anything else you think our listeners should know here at the end of the year?
Reporting on education and keeping up with what's happening in education is a little bit complicated, and you really have to. It's like a serial, right? You have to know what happened before to be able to put into context what's happening now, and that's difficult. And we're really challenged in the media world with having enough people to be able to stay abreast of all of this. So things are happening very quickly in education, and I hope that the public will pay more attention as things begin to happen, and that we can get more media coverage about what's happening. I appreciate what you do, and I appreciate that you're always paying attention to education, and we need more of that.
Do you think that the speed with which some of these bills are pushed through, do you think that's a strategy?
Yes. Yes, I do. I think that because they're so complicated, this bill that we are talking about is a 49-page bill. And if you don't understand what all those terms are, it's really hard to report on. It's really hard to pull out which pieces, how does this coincide with that, and what effect will it have on this? And if you get it pushed through really quickly, you don't have to work out the details until after it's passed. And if you have too much time to digest it, you might be paralyzed with fear of, oh my gosh, we can never get this done. So there's a happy medium there. I don't know what it is, but this one looks like it will be on the fast track.